Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. It's your home for the Champions League in podcast form. Looking back at the second legs of the round of 16 from Wednesday night, the four final teams have booked their spot in the quarterfinals. Liverpool did so, overturning a 1-0 away leg deficit with a 4-0 win at Anfield to progress 4-1 and very comfortably in the end. Spurs brought up a better fight than many expected, winning 3-2 against Atletico Madrid in North London, but ultimately it wasn't enough and they went down 7-5 on aggregate, which does feel like a wild scoreline. Bayern finished the job that they set out last week in Bergamo. They won 6-1 in Bergamo. They won 4-1 tonight in Munich to make that 10-2 on aggregate. And Barcelona put 7 past Newcastle at Camp Nou, filled to 60,000 for the first time since the renovations, to go through 8-3 on aggregate. It was a night for individual accolades as well. Both Harry Kane and Mo Salah making it to 50 Champions League goals apiece. So plenty for us to get stuck into. I'm Jack Collins and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. And joining me across the water is the one and only Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, that was that Newcastle game. For a moment, I thought it was going to be a classic. I thought we might have a classic on our hands at 2-2. I mean, maybe Barcelona fans will consider it a classic still, but that got away from them. That got away from them in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it very much did. It was 2-2 going into the 45th minute of that game, at which point Kieran Trippier gave away a penalty. So Barcelona were leading 3-2 after going into the break, after it was converted well by Lamine Yamal. Good penalty, actually, because Ramsdale went the right way. And at that moment, you're thinking, how did Newcastle respond to this, right? They're one goal behind. How they responded to it was they absolutely capitulated in the second half and Barcelona ran riot. And look, it was a crazy game of football, Dean. So I think we should start with that one. It was the early kickoff. I mean, look, it's worth pointing out that just generally in the Champions League today, all of the teams we expected to go through have gone through. Now, not all these results, I think, were necessarily predictable. I don't think anyone thought that there was going to be such a big margin of difference between Barcelona and Newcastle, even after the first half. And I don't think many people were expecting Spurs to beat Atletico Madrid. But if you'd asked me at the beginning of the night who I thought was going to progress from these four ties, I would have said to you, Liverpool, Atleti, Bayern and Barcelona. And ultimately, that is what's ended up happening in these ones. We didn't see any kind of major swings. We didn't see anyone, you know, falling apart or huge comebacks like we did yesterday. But a lot of goals as well, you know, over the course of it. And look, this set the tone for it. 9 goals at Camp Nou. And it really was an immense display from an attacking perspective from Barcelona. So from the outset, they scored 6 minutes into the first half from Rafinha, but they leave themselves relatively open. And Newcastle played some really, really nice stuff. Now, Anthony Elanga gets both of these goals. I think his first 2 Champions League goals ever, which is a nice place to go and score them. But actually, in the first half, you're watching it and thinking, okay, this is a relatively even encounter. Barcelona have a lot of the ball, but when Newcastle do have it, they're making them work, they're stretching the pitch, they're finding gaps in behind this defence. Eric Garcia is forced off relatively early with an injury and replaced by Ronald Araujo on that flank, which was one of the spaces that Newcastle targeted last week. Anthony Gordon back into the starting lineup, and you could see from the lineup what Newcastle were going to try and do, right? You've got Harvey Barnes on one side, you've got Alanga on the other, you've got Anthony Gordon through the middle. Joel Linton returns, Sandro Tonali returns, and Jacob Ramsey is kept in that midfield three in the absence of Bruno Guimaraes. But very, very clearly what they were going to try and do was tuck back, sit in, and then try and release these lads on the counter. I thought that they did more than that. I think in the first half in particular, I thought they circulated the ball really nicely. I thought that they got their fullbacks into the equation in a really interesting way as well. But ultimately, the attacking class of this Barcelona side always has the capacity to do this if they click. And in the second half in particular, they went supersonic. From the moment that Fermín López makes it 4-2 on the night, you know, at that moment, 6 minutes into the start of the second half, actually Barcelona scored 6 minutes in the first half and 6 minutes into the second half. And then there's this onslaught where Lewandowski scores 5 minutes after that. Lewandowski scores again 5 minutes after that. And 10 minutes after that, Rafinha kind of calls game. And you're actually thinking at that point, they're 7-2 up here. There are 20 minutes of this game left. This could get very, very ugly. It didn't. And, you know, there were a couple of close shaves towards the kind of final moments of it. But it just was a reminder, I think, on a kind of general level, that when Barcelona do this and when they do go through the gears, I thought Fermín was excellent again today. I thought Pedri completely and utterly controlled the game. Marc Bernal scored the goal. But also Barcelona didn't hugely rotate in terms of the players that came off. Fermín came off for Dani Olmo late. Robert Lewandowski came off for Ferran Torres. João Cancelo came off as well for Xavi Aspart, which was nice to get him kind of his moment as they shifted the defense over. But it didn't feel like Barcelona in the second half were too stretched. And I think that's the thing that Newcastle will kind of regret looking back at this game, that at a point of half time, you'd be looking at this and thinking, wow, okay, if you're in Newcastle away end, you know, having your beer at half time, you're thinking, we could get at these lads in the second half. And instead, really very, very little.
Yeah, look, Newcastle aren't that good, mate. And you know, they have been good at times and they've been good in phases. And when they have been good, I've often felt that they're punching above their weight, to be honest. I go back to the PSG game in the Champions League when they got out there with a 1-1 draw and they were getting praised for it. They got absolutely battered for half of that game. And it wasn't that
different.
Yes, but
they also could have won it in the second half. I suppose the difference here is actually the halves were flipped.
The halves were
flipped.
It feels
more, yeah.
The halves were flipped.
But they got away with that in the first half and then they grew into the game. And look, we saw that with Chelsea at PSG last week, right? In that first leg of that game, that the game got away from them late. But in the first kind of 60 odd minutes of that, it was kind of a punches being thrown by both sides. I think if you can hang in the game a little bit more, then you kind of have that capacity in the second half to go through the gears. It felt like Newcastle kind of went through their gears early and didn't have anything left to give.
Yeah, look, Elanga, I've questioned all season really whether Elanga's an actual good signing for Newcastle. I don't think he's lived up most of the time to what I think Newcastle thought they were buying. I loved the finish. When he's kind of at a wide angle. Was it the first goal? Yeah, the first goal when he gets the ball a bit wider of the goal than he would have ideally hoped, but he gets it back across and finished that one really well. And then obviously converts to get a second as well. So it was a good night for him. But yeah, this is kind of embarrassing, to be honest, in the end. It's a bit embarrassing because they were absolute sixes and sevens in the second half. And I just think that goal from the penalty spot on half time just absolutely killed them. And that's kind of what didn't happen in the PSG game that I mentioned. And I don't know like how many people would have actually watched the PSG game compared to just saw it on reflection and were like, oh, they did well there. But what happened was that Newcastle in Paris got battered for 45 minutes, but scored an equaliser on the verge of halftime and went in at 1-1, as opposed to in this game were competitive for the first half and did really well to stay in it and look like they had as much chance of scoring as Barcelona. But then on the verge of halftime, they do concede a penalty, which is slightly hard. It's not that much in it, but there is a pull from Trippier. I don't know whether Rafinha was truly going to get there, but it doesn't matter.
To be honest, I think that the fact that Rafinha might not get there is the only reason Kieran Trippier isn't sent off, because there's no attempt to play the ball there, is there?
There's none at all. It's like a desperation. He's poor. It's an instinct, to be honest. Like he hasn't done it on purpose, really. It's just an instinct to grab someone in that second because you want to stop him from scoring. Rafinha wasn't going to get on the end of it, but he did go down. It was a penalty. Lamine Yamal converts it really well. And that changes things. In the second half, Newcastle just got the runaround. They got the absolute runaround. And by the time we were into the second half of the second half, I mean, they were all over the place. Like, they were looking around.
Fourth quarter.
The fourth quarter of this game, mate. It was like a kid's training session when you've brought in the B team to give the other team some confidence. It was like, oh my God, how many are they actually going to end up scoring here? Because they're just running them ragged. So they would have been relieved to hear the full-time whistle go in the end. Conceding seven goals is bad. But this was a Barcelona team that were very much enjoying themselves in the second half. And they're hard to stop. Like when you look at the players they've got on the pitch, when they're in the joyous mood and confident and they're 4-2, 5-2, 6-2 up, they're just going to play with a lease of life that you can't match.
Yeah, I mean, look, the moment the second half kicks off, there is this just glorious pass and move element to the way that they play. And that off-ball running is what leads to the fourth goal. And I think at that moment, confidence from, you know, a Newcastle perspective is completely shattered. But the run that Fermin makes here and the kind of one-touch passing in the middle, it's kind of a ball one back there and then it's flicked on and Fermin has acres of ground. And looking at it, Malik Chow's like, he has to be offside. He's not. It's just a wonderful piece of movement in order to drag the defense out, open the gap, and then exploit it. And when Barcelona do play that kind of football, they are incredibly hard to stop. Now, that doesn't mean that they're perfect, right? And we saw that one in the first half with some individual errors from a defensive perspective. But also, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again, the reason that I think that Barcelona are the most entertaining team to watch across Europe full stop is because they are flawed. Because you know that there is the threat of that implosion. And you know that ultimately pressure can tell. But if that pressure goes the right way and the dial doesn't flick over the edge, then they're going to play some of the most scintillating stuff that you'll ever see. And this is what happens here in this game. But Newcastle don't do enough to flick the dial over the edge to find that kind of, oh, wow, we're in capitulation mode, which we have seen from Barcelona. Not all that regularly, I think, but we saw it, you know, in the Chelsea game. Obviously, they're down to 10 men in that game. You see it in the Atletico Madrid first leg of the Copa del Rey semi-final, where they're just being pulled apart. And Newcastle had done enough to worry that needle, I think, in the first half. But by the time the second half came around, with the goal advantage that the penalty gives them on the stroke of half time, there's enough to just dial it back that it's just on that verge of, okay, we're going to play you off the park. And that's exactly what they did in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were enjoying themselves and obviously takes
Camp Nou was enjoying itself, right?
Like,
and seeing
it
full and bouncing again is really quite something.
It was funny, and they were literally bouncing behind the goal. They've created this little area of ultras down the front in that pocket right behind the goal, and they were doing the old arms around each other, side to side bounce in the late stages. I don't know what you actually call that, but I see it at San Diego FC and all that sorts of stuff over, and it's very funny when people do it. Never seen it really in English football, to be honest with you. But also, it's
the closest,
been a long time.
I suppose,
there's been much
is
to
the city
jump
Poznan.
Around about. Yeah, it's similar to the Poznan. Not much to jump around about for English football at the moment, anyway. But yeah, the stadium's coming together. Barcelona are coming together. And it takes them in to the quarterfinals where they will meet a Spanish rival, mate. Because, well, poor old Igor Tudor. He's won his first game and he still lost. This bloke doesn't have much luck at all, does he? Tottenham actually beat Atletico Madrid 3-2.
This is the best example of everything is Tottenham I've seen in the last week. And I don't know if you've seen this trend starting to go, like, anytime something goes wrong, you know, like, it'll be a Spurs fan who'll be like, oh, you know, I've decided I want McLaren to win in the F1 this year. They were champions last year. Both cars didn't start in the race. He's like, everything is Tottenham. Like, and there's plenty of different examples of this, but winning a game and losing anyway, getting your first win and it not mattering in the grander scheme of things. I think that there is nuance to that and we'll get to it, but like it not mattering in the grander scheme of progression is the most this is Tottenham thing I've ever seen.
Very much so, mate. But yeah, so they've still lost, obviously, coming into the game. 5-2 down was never going to be helpful. They've in the end restored pride and lost 7-5 on aggregate, which, to be fair, when you look across the rest of the aggregate scores in the Champions League in this phase, doesn't look too bad, to be honest with you. They've come out with some fighting spirit and some pride and actually some reasons to hold hope for the rest of their season. Any Tottenham fan hoping that this was Tudor's last game in charge, if you really don't like him, they might be frustrated because he's now going to be very difficult to get rid of. He's drawn at Liverpool. Now he's beaten Atletico Madrid. So I think that he'll be staying for a little bit longer at least.
This was a highlight reel, mate. This was Two Doors Cinema Club.
Hey, another one of my favourite bands. Look, they got off to a good start, Spurs. They had to get off to a decent start, didn't they? They had to give the fans something to hold on to. It didn't look great initially, to be honest, because Ademola looked and scored very early on. Fortunately, it's like 5 minutes or something. VAR saw to that and he was offside. So that was like a sigh of relief.
Because
that
would have been offside as well.
Yeah. Well, a leg offside. But yeah, if he'd have been onside, and it wasn't, you know, if he just timed his run a little bit better, it was a little bit unnecessary that he was offside, then this would have been a very bad night for Tottenham. But nevertheless, it wasn't that bad because Matisse Tell suddenly came to life on the half hour mark with a brilliant cross. Straight onto Kolo Muani, who stuck it in the back of the net. And half time, I'm thinking, that was a good performance from Spurs and much improved.
Spurs also should have been 2-0 up at that point because Matisse Tell then raced clear and it was a good save from Oblak to deny him.
He should have made it 2-0.
If it was 2-0 at half time, I think that there is genuine belief. Now, whether that is a good thing or a bad thing, and we can talk about what this result means for Spurs at the end, but like there would have been genuine belief that they were going to turn this round if it was 2-0 at half time, I think.
100%, yeah. Maybe this is one of the problems with Matisse Tell. He had a good game, to be honest. But that one, I'm not saying it was an easy finish because it wasn't, but you've got to make those count in those clinical moments. And actually, Spurs were kept in the game by their first choice goalkeeper, Vicario, just before halftime. He made a superb save from a Simeone shot that was deflected. He got one, he managed to react quickly and put one arm up and kept one out. Proving that he is the number one around Tottenham these days. No need to change that goalkeeper for a while, Tudor. But look, second half, Atleti come out. Xavi Simons, I'm going to talk about him quite a bit in this. He goes down looking for a foul that's not a foul. Spurs are moaning about it a bit. They carry on moaning after the consequences because ultimately, Atleti break away and Alvarez ends up sticking one away in lovely fashion to make it 1-1. Tudor's looking towards the... it's a foul, it's a foul. It's not a foul. It's not a foul. And this is...
It's shoulder to shoulder.
It's just nothing. It's just not enough there at all. Like, it's never going to be given, as far as I'm concerned. And this is my problem with Xavi Simons. Like, obviously, Simons goes on to have... a day that looks relatively good. In the 52nd minute, he scores, puts them back ahead in this game. Look, he owes them moments like this, right? He goes on to score another goal towards the end. David Hanko, by the way, actually killed this tie. Rank squad extraordinaire, David Hanko, a listener from back when the pod began, used to message us, even tell it. Oh, no, you met him in New York. You and Sam met him in New York.
When he was still at Fiorentina. Yeah.
He was
like, I love the pod. Friend of the pod, David Hansko. It's always, always good to see him doing well.
So he makes it 2-2, ultimately kills it off at that point. But Xavi Simons scores a late pen, which makes him come out of this looking quite good. I'm not sure about Xavi Simons, mate. Like, he's so up and down. His performances are all over the place. And he does owe Tottenham a lot of goals, as far as I'm concerned. Like, he was such a big signing when he came in. And if you were to go back, like, through this dipped period, when Tottenham have needed someone to stand up, Simons just hasn't been there. Sometimes quite literally hasn't been there. But, like, when he's brought on, I'm just like, I know you've got more than this. And we did see it tonight. But the moment when they conceded the goal because he was on the floor, it's like, come on, mate. Like, possibly could have got up there and fought to get the ball back. So that frustrated me a little bit. But yeah, look, Tottenham got the win. Udogie came on, by the way, and got 25 minutes. So that's another positive for Tottenham. But it's Atleti that go through. Look, Atleti, it's a hard one, I think, this one. You come into a game, you're 5-2 up. And then especially you go 1-0 down, so it's 5-3. Your mentality is all over the place at that stage because you're like, well, what do we do? Because, like, are we just going to put up a wall and just not let them score? Or should we go and look for another goal that definitely kills this off? I did feel like Atleti were a little bit caught between mindsets in this game for sections of it. And I do understand that because it's a tough one to manage. But ultimately, they have managed to do it. Tottenham, unfortunately, can't have any complaints because of the way they capitulated in the first half last week.
I mean, with Atleti, it is quite difficult to kind of judge this because they made 10 changes from the first leg to their 1-0 win over Getafe in the sufferable Clásico at the weekend. So that lineup was Molina, Pubil, Jimenez, Longley, Vargas, Koke, Nico Gonzalez, Alex Baena, Thiago Almada, Alexander Sorloth. Today's lineup was Musso, Molina. Oh, Molina's the only survivor. Yeah, and that's because he scored a wonder goal at the weekend. I lie. They made 9 changes. Lenormand, Hansko, Ruggeri, Lookman, Cardoso, Llorente, Simeone, Griezmann, Alvarez. Like, that's an absurd amount of changes to make. So 10 into the game at the weekend, 9 from the weekend to today. And it felt a little bit like that. It felt a little bit disjointed. And look, I appreciate this rotation. And I do think that Atleti are one of those kind of strange squads where whatever the lineup looks like, you're like, yeah, that's fine. They're like, there's a lot of very talented players in here. And maybe bar the likes of Julian Alvarez, you're not looking at it and thinking, and maybe Ademola Lookman now as well. You're not looking at it and thinking, oh, okay, that's like a severely weakened squad from the changes they can make. And that's a strength and a weakness in some regards, because it's like, Atleti have quite a lot of very good players and very few kind of great players and very, very few world-class players. And, you know, especially with Oblak out at the moment. But in terms of just what they're able to put together, it looks disjointed from where I was standing. I think you're right about the mindset, caught between the rock and the hard place. And actually, if they'd scored that first goal, if that Lookman chance had gone in, then I think that maybe we see a very, very different game play out here where Spurs kind of retreat into their shell and try not to kind of really, really get humiliated, because it would sap all the confidence that the draw against Liverpool gave them at the weekend. As it was, it didn't count. And so Spurs can then come out of their shell a little bit more. They score the opening goal. They should score a second one. And I think that if that had gone in, that second one, then we would have seen a very different approach in the second half. Instead, it became a bit of a bizarre basketball-y kind of game, which is not really what you expect from Atleti. But, you know, obviously Alvarez scores a wonderful goal, wonderful breakaway goal just after the halftime whistle, which really keeps the tie in check. And I think this is the thing. There were moments here where if Spurs had done something, if something different had happened, then maybe the game changes. But at no point did I ever really feel like Atleti were not in control of the tie, that they weren't, you know, basically masters of their own destiny. And I suppose that, you know, that is built on the idea that, okay, your keeper makes a great save at one point. But even when it got to 3-2 and you're like, there's 5 minutes left, could they kind of build something in injury time? In those moments, even when it went to 2-1, when Xavi Simons scores that wonderful long ranger, I didn't really feel like Spurs were going to kick on and actually get this done. And part of this comes to what my next point was going to be, Dean, which is this actually the best outcome for Spurs? They've won the game. They continue a little bit of momentum. They no longer have European football to contend with. Let's be honest, Spurs weren't going to win the Champions League. And the primary prerogative of this season is survival, right? Like, that is the only thing that matters from a Tottenham Hotspur perspective going into the end of this season. They have managed to win this game to continue momentum whilst kind of removing European football from the agenda and giving themselves confidence into this big 6-pointer against Forest at the weekend. Or maybe this looks a bit silly if they don't win that game, sure. But I do think that actually this might be the best outcome for Tudor, for Spurs, and yeah, for this fan base, because they don't have to worry about this and they can just singularly focus on the goal going forward.
Yeah, look, I felt, like I said on the Patreon show last week, I felt Tottenham would go to Liverpool and get something. I could just see it being a weird game. There was no expectation on them. Liverpool were in a weird place themselves. And it came off and they got something there. Today was a game when there again was nothing to lose. I didn't think, to be honest, they would beat Atleti today. But the fact they have is great. But again, the pressure was off. So in the last two games, Tottenham have had no pressure on them. They've gone and picked up two good results. Let's see what they do on Sunday, because the pressure's on. They're at home and they're under pressure. And typically, what we've seen over this manager over Thomas Frank, over Ange Postecoglou, is that Tottenham aren't very good at home in these situations. But maybe tonight brought about some unity. Maybe tonight brought about something different that they can take into that game. And I had big doubts, actually, about whether I would expect Tottenham to win that game on Sunday. And now I do. I do think that that is such a big game for them, and it is so winnable, really, when you look at the squad, that they do take this moment, grow. I think, right, we could really breathe a big sigh of relief. With 3 points, like, it takes us a long way towards where we need to get to. Let's just get it done. I now believe that actually they probably will.
No, I think that a lot has been fixed by just putting Pap Sarr and Archie Gray into the midfield and giving them an engine room that actually is getting about and useful with the ball as well. And look, I'm not saying they're the two best passers in the world, in particular Pap Sarr, who I think is an absolutely wonderful player and I adore seeing play football. But I think what he brings in the middle of the park is more kind of like an engine room vibe. He drifts past players really nicely. Archie Gray in there, you know, working hard as well and making it all happen. I think that they've kind of stumbled across that, and you see it rolled out again here. We saw it rolled out at the weekend. There's something that they can buy into there, I think. There's something they can kind of go forward with as well. So yeah, interesting, I think, from a Spurs perspective. But I think that this probably is the best scenario in terms of the long-term strategy for the team.
For the first time, they've started to look like a team, and I think that that is something that is positive for a relegation scrap. A team that's not built for a relegation scrap, don't really know how to manage this. Well, they've started to show togetherness and fight. That means that they might be all right after all.
Yeah, absolutely. A big win for Spurs, even if it doesn't mean that they're progressing. Right, we're going to take a little break there. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about more big wins for Liverpool and Bayern Munich. Make sure you stick with us here on Champions League Takeaway. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Jack Collins and Dean Jones with you to look through these other two games. And look, it was a weird night, I think, at Anfield ahead of kickoff. Now, there was no Galatasaray fans in the stadium, Dean, because their supporters have been hit by a ban, which meant it was the most partisan crowd you will ever see at a football match. But, you know, speaking to people beforehand, spoke to Rich Buxton, who's a journalist who covers, you know, pretty much all of the football on Merseyside, but you know, with in regard to Liverpool ahead of this one, and he was like, all my friends who are Liverpool season ticket holders, etc., there's not the usual confidence that there is going into a European night at Anfield, that yeah, we'll turn this around, of course we'll turn this around, it's Anfield on a European night. There was a lot of trepidation, I think, from a Liverpool perspective, and you can understand exactly why, given what we've seen in recent weeks from this Liverpool side. Given that there feels like a real question mark over the manager and what his future is going to look like. And yet it felt like a massive game for Arne Slot to be able to, one, get the fans back on side to a degree in the stadium, and two, to kind of leave Liverpool with things to play for this season, which feels like a big, big moment for them. And he made a couple of changes, and a couple of changes that people have been crying out for. So Jeremy Frimpong went back in at right back, which meant that Dominic Szoboszlai could play in midfield, and that felt important. Milos Kerkez came back in at left back to give them width down that flank, which they miss if Florian Wirtz is playing in that kind of left 10 role, because he doesn't tend to drift into those wide spaces quite as much, which felt important. They played Gravenberch and McAllister as the kind of two sitting midfielders, which allowed them a kind of space to work with and a shield from which they could build. Szoboszlai and Wirtz played as kind of wide tens with Mohamed Salah and Hugo Ekitike out front. In many ways, it was exactly what a lot of people have been calling for in the last couple of weeks, to utilize a system like this, and also to drop Cody Gakpo, who's been a big feature and a bit of a lightning rod for criticism. Fairly or unfairly, I think he's become a bit of a lightning rod for criticism for Liverpool fans this season. And so you kind of look at it and think, okay, that's a team that should be able to get the job done. When the lineup came out, I think there was a lot of sighs of relief around Anfield and around Liverpool in general. And you look at this Galatasaray side and you're thinking, okay, how are they going to play? Now, we know that Gala went to Turin with a massive lead over Juventus and very, very nearly messed that up. And they eventually got through that, but it took extra time against 10 men of Juventus after Lloyd Kelly got that red card. And you were thinking, how are they going to deal with not necessarily the atmosphere. This is a team that plays at Rams Park. They're used to kind of hostile atmospheres, et cetera, et cetera. But how are they going to deal with Liverpool on a European night? And the truth is, Dean, they didn't. They didn't get to grips with it whatsoever. Now, they weren't helped by the fact that Osimhen injured his already injured hand. It looks like potentially a broken bone there, and basically sort of moped around for the first half. And that's not really a criticism on him. You know, he was going to be substituted about 20 minutes in. He sort of tried to shake it off, but like, I think he has genuinely broken a bone in his hand. And you're like, don't shake that off. You're not going to be able to shake off a broken bone, mate. They were ready to make the substitution.
Mate, I tried to shake off a broken wrist once when I was playing rugby. So I understand. You know, you try and be brave, right? You try and be brave.
How did that go for you, Dean?
I was crying 4 hours later at home, and my mum had to take me to hospital, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be hugely surprised, right, if we saw a very sad later on. Victor Osimhen later on, because like he just couldn't shake it. It was like it was in his head.
Yeah.
And it was interesting kind of watching them try to play out, and especially because they're pinned in by wave after wave of Liverpool attacks as they grow in confidence in this game and just not have the out ball that they're looking for. So they took him off at half time. Leroy Sané came on, Noah Lang came on, Soloy went down to right back. And at that moment, you're like, okay, are they going to be able to? And they tried for the first 5 minutes of the second half to utilize that on the break and utilize some of that pace. But the moment that Liverpool got the second goal in this one, you were like, okay, this one could be done. The first goal was a lovely, lovely corner, worked out to Dominic Szoboszlai on the edge of the box, and he fires it in across a load of bodies. And there's a couple of moments in this one. Liverpool get a penalty on the stroke of halftime. It's a debatable one. I think it is a penalty. You know, there's no angle on it that makes me think he hasn't made contact with him, but I think you can debate it. And I'm sure that there will be people debating it long into the night. But Mohamed Salah takes the penalty and tries to kind of clip it down the middle, and it's kicked away by the goalkeeper.
Now, bear in mind, penalty, mate, wasn't it?
Also a dreadful penalty. Bear in mind, he's waiting for his 50th Champions League goal at this point. And I'm like, does he not want it to be a pen? Does he want it to be something
he
special?
He was caught in two minds, wasn't he? He was like, 100%. Should I Panenka it?
We learned nothing from this season is stop doing Panenkas. Like, that is surely the lessons we're all learning from this season so far. After poor old Brahim Diaz and poor old Dango Ouattara as well with his one in that game.
You
used
to see him like once every 5 months. Now you see him every weekend.
Yeah. I think we all need to start learning the lesson on Panenkas. I was hearing, I can't remember who was talking about it. It was a pundit recently. They were like, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Like, if you score, like, great. But if you miss, you look like an idiot. Like, if you hit it hard and the goalkeeper saves it, everyone's like, oh, good save. Like, that's how it is. And I think he's probably right on it. But anyway, Salah makes amends because he sets up Hugo Ekitike for an excellent second. And from that moment, Liverpool are rampant. 2 minutes later, Ryan Gravenberch adds a third shot save. He sort of digs it into the ground. It curls into the corner and you're like, okay, they're away. And then Mo Salah gets his moment. And it's a beautifully worked move and a beautiful goal from Mo Salah. He kind of drives into it. He kind of passes the ball back, and it's a touch from Florian Wirtz straight out the scrapbook, like a little stop on the ball to allow a player to run in behind you. It's a bit like a loop in rugby. Like, you see this quite a lot from the number 10 who will kind of play someone and wrap around. It was Johnny Sexton's favourite move. And it felt like that because Salah's kind of already going round Wirtz, and he's just stopped the ball for him to go, shifts it out of his feet and curls an absolute pearler into the top corner. And I was like, right, that's how you score your 50th Champions League goal. Became the first African player to score 50 in the Champions League. And it really was a beautiful moment for Mo Salah in a season that has been difficult for him, right? Like, I don't think anyone's going to sit there and argue that. And whether you think, you know, whose fault you think that is completely up to you. But I think that he's really needed that moment, really needed something to just kind of re-announce himself. And he's there, you know, with the badge in one hand, giving it in front of the cop after scoring this wonder goal. To make it 4-0, to like cool game in so many ways. And you're like, okay, cool. That's a special moment. A special moment for everyone who was there tonight, who I think would have genuinely found the atmosphere weird without a section of away fans to kind of go a little bit back and forth with. At times I felt it was like, there were moments with it where you're like, oh, the atmosphere is really good here. But I think there were times they're like kind of waiting for something to almost engage them again. And you're like, normally that's the away fans. You respond to something that they do. Instead, they were having to wait for moments on the pitch. Thankfully, I think Liverpool delivered enough of them. And this could have been six or seven. Obviously, we've seen some big scores today. This could have been six or seven. Liverpool had chance after chance after chance, had a couple ruled out for offsides and fouls in the build-up, etc. There's a fifth goal that McAllister scores. I still have no idea what it was ruled out for. Van Dijk just tries to head the ball. The keeper jumps into him. It falls on the floor and Alexis scores. And the ref's like, foul on the keeper. And you're like, obviously VAR will change that. Nope, not at all. Like, you're like, no one is quite sure why it's ruled out. But either way, this was a big result for Liverpool. It was a system that worked on the night. It got the best out of a number of different players. We saw Liverpool kind of with these slick attacking moves growing in confidence over the course of it. They have a big game at the weekend against Brighton to try and bounce back in the Premier League before we get to the international break. And then obviously before that FA Cup game where they'll come up against Manchester City. And you're just looking at it and thinking, okay, all right. Because if they play like this and that confidence is back, they still have the capability of doing something pretty special. And I thought they showcased that well tonight.
Yeah, look, the stats look like old school Liverpool as we look at them right now. They had 62% possession, 32 total shots, 16 shots on target. Gala had 4 total shots, 1 on target. You'd be forgiven to thinking we've gone on rewind for a year and this was the old Liverpool when you look through that. Obviously, it seemed a little bit sweaty for a while. Would they get through? Especially when Salah missed his penalty right on the verge of half time. I was like, oh, is that one going to go to extra time? Is that one going to be the one that gets dragged out? Or can they see to business here? And obviously, they clicked into gear, got the job done in the second half. That's important for their season. It's important for Arne Slot too, because there are some Liverpool fans that really don't trust him right now. So he needed this one.
You know, like there's lots of different stats in football and you kind of look at them and some of them tell you a story and some of them don't. I was watching this game thinking this is complete and utter one-way traffic, right? Like there is nothing going on here which suggests to me that Liverpool are not going to win this game. And it was said on the commentary, it was like, there's only one outcome if it stays like this after halftime. In fact, it got worse, like from a Galatasaray perspective. And I went on the match momentum chart, you know, on when you kind of get up these things on the score apps or whatever. And it was like Liverpool in red and Gala in white. The entire thing is red. Like the entire thing is red. And I was like, right, okay, cool. So the match momentum graph is telling the story of what happened in this game because it really, really was complete and utter domination. And again, we've seen Gala go away from home after a really positive first leg performance and result and just capitulate in very similar fashion to what they did in Turin. And if they'd lost that game, I don't think there would have been many people complaining about it. I mean, like lost the tie in that game. And I think that they will have very, very few complaints tonight either. This was completely and utterly deserved and a really, really important one, as you say, for both Liverpool and Arne Slot.
Yeah.
Talking of dominations, Dean, you watched Bayern.
Yeah, exactly. So while Liverpool go through to play PSG in the next one of their game, we've got Real Madrid against Bayern Munich fully set up now as another quarterfinal. It was obviously always going to be the case. This was never going to be a shock. Atalanta required at least 5 goals at the Allianz to cause an upset. And as it is, Bayern have gone on to win 10-2 on aggregate, which is their largest margin of victory in a European knockout tie since 2009. There was a shock of sorts, though, because Kane initially, Jack, missed a penalty in the first half.
I did say this. He's a very, very lucky boy. Actually, that's quite fun. Both Salah and Kane missed penalties tonight and both hit their 50 goals.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, Kane had a spot kick saved by Sportiello and he was off his line. Like, he did step off his line and Kane was in absolutely no doubt. The second Kane had the shot saved, he literally turned around to the ref and went, he was off his line. It was like, I can't possibly have missed that penalty like because of my fault. He was off his line. And the ref was like, I'm going to have a look. And before you know it, the replay's shown. Sportiello's, he does step off it early, but it's because Kane stutters in his run-up. It's not actually the keeper. He's not trying to gain an advantage. He's like, he's in the moment too, and he's trying to anticipate what's happening. And Kane's kind of run-up, I think, kind of spurs him into coming off his line just one step too early. Kane puts the ball back down on the spot, makes absolutely no mistake whatsoever. Jack, have you seen Kane's second goal?
Yes, I have. Exceptional.
It, mate, I mean, I had to bring Taylor into the room
really,
and show her.
He just doesn't really celebrate either. He's like, yeah, what do you expect?
It's just unbelievable forward play. Bayern by this stage are like having fun with Atalanta, right? They're forming circles. They've got like Atalanta players in the middle of a circle in their own half doing
doggies. They're doing rondos.
They were. There was one stage not too long before this goal where they actually were doing the biggest rondo you've ever seen mid-game. And then suddenly the ball's pulled back to Kane on the edge of the box and he kind of is facing the wrong way. And he's faced up with two Atalanta players on the edge of the box and he's facing the wrong way initially. And then he turns between the two of them like they're not there and just sticks one in the top corner. It's unbelievable. And like Kane is just like in a world of his own at the moment when it comes to being this level of goal scorer. It was just a brilliant, brilliant goal. Definitely my highlight of this one. Lennart Kahl went on to grab the third goal. Obviously a nice moment for him, the 18-year-old. And Luis Diaz went on to grab a fourth for Bayern. Atalanta did get a moment of joy for themselves. 4 minutes left. Samardzic sticks one away for them. It's 4-1 on the night. 10-2 on aggregate. And Bayern, yeah, now go into that game against Real Madrid looking to show that they deserve their status as either second favourites to win this tournament or joint favourites with Arsenal to win this tournament.
I mean, this is it, right? Like we didn't get the great story, which I was hoping for. We didn't get Leonard Prescott in goal, which is a shame. We were hoping that, you know, not that Jonas Erbig's concussion was serious, but that, you know, the protocols were followed just one day longer to make sure so that we got to see 16-year-old German-American Leonard Prescott between the sticks in this game, because what an introduction to senior football that would have been. You're like, okay, we're 6-1 up. It's probably going to be fine. And even if we do concede a number of like random goals, like we have Harry Kane on the pitch, we have Luis Diaz on the pitch, we're probably going to score a few as well. So it's like almost scot-free in terms of what you can do and go in there. So I was a little bit sad, especially with the, you know, defense that would have been protecting him. I was pleased that Atalanta got a goal, just as I was in the first leg, at Smarjic heading in from that kind of flicked on corner, because they worked incredibly hard again tonight. But this is just a Bayern side that are unbelievably good to watch. When you think about the amount of changes that came in here, Dean. Right, like Tom Biskov plays, Stanisic plays, Goretzka got a start. That's a rarity these days. Pavlovic plays a fair bit, but Lennart Kahl starts, Rafael Guerreiro starts. And, you know, the reason that Harry Kane's come back in here at this point is probably because you're like, oh, actually, we do need him at the weekend because Nicholas Jackson's got himself banned. So we may as well, you know, utilize him in this situation. And also for him to get his 50th Champions League goal, making him the first English player to do that. So records falling all over the place. But they're just, even in this form, and this is most of a Bayern B team, like they're without Joshua Kimmich and Michael Olise today, both of whom got themselves booked, which felt a little bit weird, and I'm still not completely sure how okay I am with. But, you know, Michael Olise right now, as far as I'm concerned, is probably the best player in the world, or at least the informed player in the world. What he's put together this season at Bayern has been absolutely spectacular. Now, he is an absolute wizard. So to be able to do this without either of those two in the squad, you know, your man who's in there and wearing the armband on a regular basis in Joshua Kimmich, who can play in all sorts of positions and does a job everywhere he goes, and Michael Olise, who's just been spectacular, scintillating all tournament long. Like, and to do this to an Atalanta side who have been going, okay, obviously we're torn apart in the first leg, but have been going relatively good guns, who drew with Inter at the weekend. I mean, just spectacular. As far as I'm concerned, they remain my tournament favourites.
There we go. Jack's back in Bayern. I'm back in Arsenal. Yeah. Who are you guys back in? It's exciting now, mate. And we were saying yesterday about this is the stage in which there are no pretenders anymore. And when you start to look now at the lineups for the quarterfinals, this is pretty premium stuff that we're seeing in the elite competition. PSG Liverpool, Real Madrid Bayern Munich, Barcelona Atletico Madrid, and Sporting against Arsenal. Like, that is a lovely lineup of games to come.
Yeah, I mean, look, interesting. Three Spanish sides, two Premier League sides, a German side, a French side, and a Portuguese side make up the final eight, which is interesting. I mean, obviously, the domination of English sides in the last 16 with six of them in there was something well commented on. But this has been a pretty chastening experience for the Premier League sides. I looked at it earlier. They conceded, the six Premier League sides conceded 30 goals across their ties, which is just absolutely flabbergasting in so many different ways, Dean. You're looking at it and just thinking, that's on average five per team. Now, and you take on that Arsenal conceded one and Liverpool conceded one, right? So like that then is 28 goals spread out between four sides. It's incredible. They've shipped seven on average, the English sides, bar the two that have progressed over the course of this. That is as chastening as I think as you could have asked for. And look, as someone who enjoys sometimes when the Premier League sides do not progress, because I dislike the conversation that the Premier League is so far and away better than anything else in Europe. I feel like it doesn't pay attention or kind of nuance to the discussions going on elsewhere. Like, you look at that and it's a very, very hard one to defend as a Premier League fan, I think.
Yeah, look, I've been wondering all season and the debate's been there. Like, has the quality dropped in the Premier League? Is this league as bad as we all think it is? And maybe the Champions League has shown it up to be, the levels have dropped. There is more parity now. And maybe the rest of football isn't as obsessed with corners and free kicks as the Premier League has become. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe the Premier League's been showing up in that respect. I don't know, but it's fun. It's livened things up. It's kept everybody on their toes. And I'm happy with the lineup that we've got.
Yeah, very, very excited. Quick fire, Dean, of those four ties, who goes through? Let's have a quick prediction. Real Madrid, Bayern?
Bayern.
Sporting Arsenal?
Arsenal.
Barcelona, Atleti?
I do think it'll be Barcelona.
PSG, Liverpool?
PSG all day long.
Okay.
That could be the easiest out of all of them, mate.
We'll see. We will see.
Do you agree with me, or is there a major one you don't agree with?
Yeah, I mean, look, I do on paper agree with you. I think it's going to be very interesting that we see the second legs of these take place, you know, at the Emirates, at Anfield, at the Metropolitano, and then at the Allianz for Bayern. If Real Madrid were at home second, I think maybe I would consider that more, but I think that Bayern just feel too strong. I've just picked them as my favorites, and I think that they will be too strong. I also am interested to see what Real Madrid look like by the time that these quarterfinals come around. Does some of the big guns return? Something I've been talking about quite a lot. And I think that Barcelona Atleti tie might well throw up some chaos in the same way that we've seen, but I am super intrigued. I don't think it's going to be plain sailing for those four sides, but I do agree with you that those are the four sides that qualify.
The thing is, we won't be right. That's what's great about it. Like, this won't shake out like we think it's going to on paper right now. And that's what makes it all brilliant.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call this Champions League takeaway to a close. All that's left for me to do. Say a massive thank you to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been final Champions League takeaway for a couple of weeks. We'll obviously have an international break. And then on the other side of that, the Champions League will return, as will your takeaway. But make sure you stay locked in to Ranks. We're going to be talking about some interesting stories over this international break. Perhaps some transfers, perhaps some World Cup build-up as well. The Truth is back on Friday, where the boys are picking their Premier League player of the season, as well as the player of the season from the rest of Europe's top five leagues. So that will be an absolutely fun one to get stuck into. And we'll see you all next week. Thank you, Rank Squad, for listening as ever. We'll see you very shortly. Take it easy. Peace.